Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today we're joined by Joseph Magziarez. He is a certified appraiser with the designations MAI, SRA. He is the designated president for the Appraisal Institute for 2011, 38 years of experience, and even teaches dozens of courses for the Institute, and as well as teaches in foreign countries. So, Joe, welcome to our show.
Good afternoon.
If you could explain a little bit of what the designation means, what does MAI stand for, and how do you end up with that designation?
Okay, that's an interesting question. I'm happy to help clarify that. Originally, the MAI was an acronym, a member of Appraisal Institute, but a number of years ago, our board of directors decided that all members were members. So MAI is just three initials that means you hold the highest professional designation in the world.
Okay.
And that relates to general type properties, residential, whatever.
Okay.
The SRA originally meant a senior residential appraiser. And again, that's just three initials now. That means that you have the highest residential certification in the world.
And how do you get those designations? Is that a series of years of experience or a series of educational classes or a combination?
Yes, it's a combination of both. Actually, you enter the business, and today you would take the qualifying courses and qualifying education mandated by the Appraisal Foundation Qualifications Board. Then we have additional course requirements above that. We have to write a demonstration appraisal report, very similar to a master thesis. Then we go through a strenuous peer review by our peers, and they look at 25, 30 of our reports periodically. And when they believe that we have the competency necessary, then we apply and are awarded those designations.
Okay. In 1989, there was a passage of something called the FIREA Act, which established a system for state certification and licensing for real estate appraisers. How has the passage of FIREA improved the appraisal industry?
Well, you have great questions, and I'm glad you asked that. What happened back then was they had the savings loan meltdown, or whatever you would want to call it. I was practicing then. At that time, best guess was around 30,000 some appraisers versus 105,000 appraisers today in the United States. The professional groups, which would have been the American Institute of Real Estate Appraisers, Society of Real Estate Appraisers, ASA and ASFMRA, had professional requirements, peer review, and standards that our members followed, but there were no standards, no license, no certification. So essentially, anyone that would want to be an appraiser could say they are one and do things. When they reviewed and looked at causes of what went on, they realized that there was really very little pattern in what evaluations looked like. In other words, there were no standardized forms that a majority of the appraisers were using,
mm-hmm.
or any certain format, and there was no mandated development process except for those that belonged to professional groups. So Title 11 came in to rectify that. And what Title 11 essentially said, that if you have a federally related transaction, which means you're borrowing money from a federally insured bank, that you would have to be certified appraiser.
Okay.
And so it started that process.
Has that had the desired effect to getting more accurate appraisals?
Well, unfortunately, no. And I don't want to be completely negative on it because it gave it a good start. But unfortunately, what happened is at the last minute, just prior to passing FIREA, they sort of downplayed the importance of competency, and they changed some of the requirements, which allowed a lot of people to come into the business without having any peer review, without really having anybody know if they have experience, but pass three or four examinations, and then they could be certified or licensed appraiser. So that was a weak spot.
I see.
Eventually, that's turned over as of 2008. They've made a good run at it, the Appraisal Foundation has, of bringing coursework and peer review up to a higher level. But the Appraisal Institute, we think that's still a bit too low. But it is a start, and it does give regulation, but there's problems with that also.
I want to make sure I understood. At the time, there were 30,000 appraisers, and now there's over 105,000?
Yes.
Okay.
Our best guess at that point was there was around 30-some thousand appraisers that we knew about, because there was no registry at all. And so there was really no way to quantify that, except that we had people in each state kind of monitoring, trying to find out, look up in the yellow books at that time, phone books, and trying to locate and count how many people were in the business.
When you go through the initial education of trying to be an appraiser, there's a fair amount of book work and field work. Which one of those really is the most important element in training an appraiser?
Well, I sincerely believe that the most critical element is having on-the-job training.
Okay. I would agree with that. What was the stimulus for the FIREA Act? Why did they think, okay, we need to have better appraisers?
Well, not unlike today, there were huge losses in the real estate areas, the arena, as there is today. And there was really no mandated methodology of requiring anyone to have certain education or have certain experience. And lenders were pretty much allowed to hire whoever they wanted or whatever. I can recall in the 70s when I was in the business that some of these lenders would actually, the board of directors would get together, have a nice lunch, and three or four would hop in a car, they'd drive by a property and say yes or no on the loan. So that was part of the process at that time. It sort of worked because we didn't have different financing or tricky loans or equity lines, and people bought homes and kept them forever. So it was a completely different world then.
Like you mentioned, the country is now experiencing a very tough time again, lots of foreclosures. Is the appraisal world taking some heat for the problem, and is some of it justified?
Well, there is a little bit of talk about appraisals, but let me share a couple of the good things. We just finished 2 days in Washington, D.C. yesterday with regulators, members of all appraisal groups in related industry, and they gave us a copy of Congressional Research Services. And the periodical is dated January 29, 2009, by Mark Jickling, Causes of the Financial Crisis, and that's by the Congressional Research Services. They list all the causes they could find of the current meltdown in the market today, and this would be real estate and also commercial mortgage-backed securities, other things. 26 key areas, and appraisers not mentioned one in this report.
That's a good thing.
Well, I think it is, but it doesn't mean that we're perfect at this point.
Okay. I'd have to say, though, there must be a few lines having to do with lenders in that report, though.
Yes, but it's more on mortgage fraud, the lack of due diligence by lenders, and quite a bit of blame is put on the regulators where it should be.
Yes. Do you see legislative changes for the appraisal business because of the downturn, though?
We have not yet. Our President Jim Ameren is testing before Congress this afternoon with the Housing and Finance Committee later this afternoon, and we're giving input on some legislative changes that we would like to see occur. And part of that is deals with the Home Valuation Code of Conduct and other items that are coming out in the HVCC. Home Valuation Code of Conduct would be the major item that was planned to come out. Of course, there's been a suit filed recently by the mortgage bankers, one of the mortgage bankers group, to try to stop that.
Right in this market in California, lender-owned properties dominate the listings that are for sale, and the process usually starts off with a broker price opinion. Are appraisers part of that process, or is that separate?
Well, if they're a licensed broker, they could be, but we have rules and regulations we have to follow. With the BPOs, they really don't have the same requirements. There's no accountability for those. But to get a listing, a broker price opinion is a completely legitimate thing for them to do. The question you have to ask sometimes is that often brokers may be influenced about, I can give you this opinion and list the property. I know I consulted for this. So maybe people aren't getting top dollar that they could get for the property. In other words, appraisers have to be unbiased. We're paid a flat fee for what we do. Brokers can be paid on a commission or any sort of basis. And is that always rises a little suspicion. I'm not insinuating anyone's a crook, but when you have different motivations and the amount of money you can make depends on the deal closing or not closing, I think that that could influence opinion.
How do the two groups actually get along, the real estate brokers and the appraisers? Is this a group that respects each other and feels that both of each of you, you know, they each serve a separate purpose and that you're kind of team partners?
In many cases, yes. We have heavy disagreement on the BPO issue.
We
honestly believe that if they want to do valuation, they should be subject to the same regulations that we are, same peer review. The problem with that, and we've had long talks with the National Association of Realtors, which is their overpartner, their overseer, but all the local boards, all the states have their own rules and regulations, so the national organization really can't tell them you cannot do BPOs or you can do BPOs for money. We've identified 23 states that have laws that prohibit BPOs for lending purposes, and we just made Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac aware of that, and I can tell you yesterday at a meeting with those people, one group immediately called one of their management companies and told them not to order any more BPOs in those 23 states.
Okay.
Well, and the reason being is they didn't want to feel they were inducing someone to break a law.
Okay. About 2.5 years ago, I attended a meeting. It was about 2,500 brokers, and they were intending to be the broker that listed lender-owned properties. The lenders were on the stage, and one of the broker raised a little bit of a beef, saying that he had done a lot of broker price opinions, and he had not received any of the listings. And a president of a lending business stood up and said, we are currently giving all of the listings to the highest broker price opinion. And pretty much in unison, that was the accepted method. Does that sound pretty familiar to the ears of an appraiser?
Well, I don't do that, but I would imagine that depending on where the market going up or coming down, or you know what the situation of the market is, many people that own property could be influenced when the broker tells them, "I can get you this price that's well above what someone else says." Often that overprices a property. It usually sells for significantly less, but that does not surprise me at all.
How big of a problem is coercion for the appraiser?
Well, that is a very valid situation. It has been really big, and it's been really big in California. And what's happened out there recently, they had a party out there that ended up suing a mortgage company for blacklisting that person for not knuckling under to the pressure and not changing the value, giving a higher value. So that has happened quite a bit. This supposedly will be addressed in the Home Valuation Code of Conduct, which prohibits coercion. There will be an IVIP, a call center where appraisers can call in if you're getting pressured, or if you're put on a blacklist for not coming out at values, those sort of things. It may help some people.
Okay.
So some people, and usually it's a less experienced than the people that are not with a larger firm, a well-established firm or something. They're just entering the business, so they can probably be pressured a little easier than someone my age, you know, in the mid-60s. You know, if anyone wants to pressure me, that's probably going to be tough.
Okay. When in the actual document of the appraisal document itself, there is a statement in there that the appraiser states that they have not been influenced by anyone connected with the transaction or that had basically a final decision on their numbers. Is there a penalty for being swayed by somebody that's a party to the transaction?
There is for the appraiser.
Right, that's what I mean.
But I don't think there is for whoever's trying to influence them at this point.
Okay.
But that penalty, the problem there is they could be, if it was a appraisal being assigned to Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or FHA, VA, those people could take that person off their approved list that they would not accept any more appraisals. States also have enforcement policies. However, many states lack proper funding or staff to follow up on those issues. So often it doesn't get done. If it does, it's done at significantly different levels and significantly different end results.
I read some of the new legislation, and some of it's attempting to require a bond for appraisers. What effect would that have on the industry?
That would be devastating, and I'll tell you why. We can tell by congressional their report that the appraiser is not the reason that this had happened. Certainly, there are some that have inflated values. There are some stinkers in every group. But we looked at it. That would add about $16,000 a year to an appraiser's cost to do business. That would be passed on to a customer. It would essentially put a lot of people out of business. It would have it would be very hard on the bonding issue probably to even get that payoff if you had one. Most appraisers carry errors and omissions insurance, so if they were sued, there's recovery there. But this bonding is very bad. It's sort of like here we're not the ones complacent or that are active in the problem, yet we're being more strictly regulated, which I don't have a problem. But to require a bond, most of this bad deals came because the people approving the loans should have never approved the loans. They're the ones that should have the bond.
Yeah, I would agree with that. There's looks like a good chance that bankruptcy judges may soon be given the power to do what's called a cram down, change the loan amount based on a current appraisal. What are your thoughts about that change?
Well, if that's true, then that's excellent for appraisers because it's almost like a right to work that you know that they are going to use appraisals. I know that's in the bill, but until it passes with it in the bill, I have some doubts that they wouldn't try to go with different avenues. It seems what got everyone in trouble is quick and cheap. A lot of these loans were made with automated valuation models or broker price opinions and not with appraisals. And so if they require an appraisal and they hire good people, that can really help out the consumers that are suffering because they were put into bad situations. There is some downside to what would happen also.
I think so, too. You mentioned the automation models. A lot of people think that's very easy to appraise a property. You know, you just get an average or something, push a button, and there you go. I would imagine you'd have a very different opinion of that.
Well, sometimes they're very good and sometimes they're not. Now, depending on certain parts of California, if I go into a tract subdivision where there's a lot of homogeneity and everything sells for a price, and then if you want this option and this option, it's so much money and it goes on. But I teach out at the University of San Diego there, and I drive around with Steve Roach from San Diego, who's another MEI, and look at all the varying different types of property. Automated valuation model might not be very good if you have dissimilar items in a property. Also, an AVM really doesn't know what's across the street or what's next door to the property or what's inside the property. I looked at one yesterday, the result, and I was astounded because they came up with a model that had a high confidence interval. The property is 4,000 square feet. The AVM picked the 800 or 900 square foot property, a 3,000 square foot property, the 6,000 square foot property. They came up with the value. Yet, if you think about this, if you're out looking for a 4,000 square foot five bedroom home with three bathrooms, you would never consider an 800 square foot house.
No.
You might not consider another style of house. So, they're mathematical models, and they're as good as they test them often. The problem, AVM is a regression-type analysis, and it goes on the data. So let's look at what happens with AVMs today. I talked to Fannie and Freddie, and they said, well, AVMs are coming in about 15% lower than appraisals are today. I said, well, that doesn't surprise me because AVM is based on historical data. It's not based on forecasting. It might not be based on the most recent thing that happened. In my area here in Rockford, we can be 60 days behind on recording deeds. So you're trailing the market, and if the trend is down, naturally when you forecast with a regression model, it's going to follow that curve or that line. So you may end up with actually the AVMs creating lower values and pushing the market downward.
Okay. Now, to me, that's very significant what you just said. Is that usually the process of a review appraisal?
Well, a review appraisal or an AVM with having an appraiser go out and look at the results would be a much better way to do that. But on AVMs, if you took an AVM in their printout, there's really no way to review that because it's really an estimate. It's not an opinion. People can give opinions, and that's based on knowledge, experience. So there's some science there, but evaluation is also an art.
Mm-hmm.
And an AVM is just math.
What does the AVM stand for?
Automated Valuation Model.
Okay.
And they can be very good predictors. They can be very good predictors of, let's say I was buying a package of 50,000 loans, and I wanted to check the value of those mortgages that I'm buying. I could use an AVM to get predicted outcomes.
Okay.
And if it looked at each, then I look at each specific loan I'm buying. If that differs by more than 10 or 15 or 20%, it says, get this one reviewed or get that one reviewed.
Okay.
So it has a use, but as a value predictor, it's usually not too good.
What do you think the point was when you talked about Freddie and Fannie saying there was a 15% difference between the appraisal and the AVM? Were they happy that the AVM came in lower because that made for more conservative loans?
Well, no, not necessarily. What I asked them how often they tested their model, and they said often, whatever often means. And I don't know how they test it, but if you were to have one, you would run your AVM, and they have to, I call it mutating, but every time new data gets in there, it changes all the equations eventually, you know, not by a lot, but you might have 15, 16 data points or 50 different characteristics that you're looking at. But once that starts a downward trend, then it's going to, and the same thing happened when they were using these to make loans, the trend was upwards, so
yes.
It kept AVM would naturally look for a higher predicted value in the future. And so they're kind of okay if the market's stable and moving along, but when you have rapid increases or rapid decreases, they lose their validity very quickly.
What part of an appraisal is trying to look into the future? It was my understanding that an appraisal was to pick a valid value for a day, today.
That's correct. We have three value dates that an appraiser can estimate for. Usually it's a current value today.
Okay.
If I'm doing a relocation appraisal for someone, then they would want to know if it took 90 or 100 120 days to get a sale on a property, what might that future value be at that point in time?
Okay.
And then for, let's say for estate purposes or something, they might say, well, the estate date was 6 months ago or 9 months ago, so you would forecast then. But probably 90% of the value, maybe 95% are for current values.
Okay. This will be our last question for this segment. We have one more after this. What changes would you like to see in the appraisal business?
Well, one thing, of the about 105,000 appraisers, there's one level called a licensed appraiser. And that was one of the first ones that were allowed under FIREA. And so it's been out there for 20-some years. And the educational requirements are very low. Those people, if they have the educational requirement to get that license level, would not qualify to be certified residential or certified general today.
Okay.
In my best understanding, about 25,000 of those people are out there in about 6 or 7 states, I'm not really sure, but a very small number of states. But we're looking at the statistics from the appraisal subcommittee and from their website, and it appears that 50% of the egregious violations that appraisers can make are made by licensed appraisers. So 25,000 out of 105,000, yet 50% of the worst complaints come from that level, clearly shows that they may not have the educational competency to be competent in today's market.
Okay.
The other thing I'm going to say, but of those, if you look at 25,000 guys have 50% of the complaints, but they're only in 6 states, that even makes it worse, doesn't it?
Because
the rest include 50 states, and so they're 1/10 of the states about, or 12%, and yet. And so we've lobbied at FHA recently, took our advice based on good information, and we said, you should consider giving these people a window to upgrade to certified residential because if you're going to compete in the market today, you should meet the current requirements, not the past.
Okay. With that, we have to end our first program. Joe, thank you so much for joining us. That's Joe Magziarez with the Appraisal Institute.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.